two totally different tasks today involving two different packets, your previous one and the one you just got today. And only one of the two things is really new, and that's the only part I'm really going to talk about. The other one is review at this point because you've already been tested over it even. But in your older packet, what you're going to do after you get started, after you load your gel, which I'll talk about in a minute, then as soon as you're done loading the gel, go to the older packet and do the gene expression part, which is self-explanatory. And like I said, you should already know that stuff, but it's good to review it. I'll just talk about the new stuff, though. We're doing a new technique, we're doing a technique you haven't done before, probably. It's not really a new technique, but it's called electrophoresis. And this is just one of several different separation techniques used in science. Separation techniques separate things from each other, which is often useful for whatever reason. Like centrifugation, for instance, separates things based on how heavy they are. Distillation separates things because they evaporate at different temperatures. Chromatography separates things. Well, so does electrophoresis. But electrophoresis separates particles in a sample based on electrical charge, on size, and on shape. And if you have a mixture of particles in your sample and none of them has any electrical charge, then you're going to have to look elsewhere for a separation technique because electrophoresis will not work. At least some of the particles in a sample need to be electrically charged for electrophoresis to work, because what electrophoresis is based on is the movement of particles through a gel, which I've just drawn here, like the gel you're going to work with. Particles move through the gel by being attracted to one end or the other because there's an electrical charge, there's an electrical potential, a voltage, applied from one end of the gel to the other. So, for instance, negative up here, positive down here as I've drawn it. Well, if a particle is neither positively nor negatively charged, it's not going to be attracted to either charge at either end. So it's just going to stay where it is. That's why if all you have are uncharged particles, they're not going to do anything. But if you have a negatively charged particle in your sample, it's going to move toward whatever the positive end of the gel is, where you've applied that electrical voltage. And the gel is not by itself. We put the gel in an electrophoresis chamber, which you see three of back there, those plastic things, that you can hook a power supply up to it to apply the voltage. And in other words, whatever the charge is, the particle is going to move toward the oppositely charged end because opposite charges attract each other. That's what forces them to move through the gel. Gels have wells, as you'll see, or you can actually already see. Look in your Petri dish, which is a practice gel for you to work with, and you can see wells in the gel, which are really just shallow depressions. So they're not holes all the way through the thickness, but they have a certain depth. And the wells are where you deposit, with a micropipetter, your sample, which is a collection of particles, into the well. Well, if you have a sample that you know, or suspect at least, contains both positively and negatively charged particles, then you wouldn't want to have a gel like I just drew with wells all at one end. Because if this is the negative end, and you have a positively charged particle in there, it's going to go upward in this picture, and it's going to spill right off the edge of the gel. You'll lose it. So you would make a gel in that situation when you have both positively and negatively charged particles with its wells halfway down the length of the gel. And the positively, if I have negative on this end, positive on this end, the negatively charged particles would go downward and the positively charged particles would go upward in this picture, right? Well, we don't have a gel like this today. We have a gel with wells all at one end, like I originally drew. And that's because we know what our samples are. Our samples are the DNA that you set up last week. DNA from owls, remember. You picked two owls from the 20 that you could choose from. And you subjected that to PCR. So you have the same DNA as you started out with last week, just a hell of a lot more identical copies of it. But the point is here is DNA is the only particles we're interested in. And DNA, no matter how big it is and no matter what organism you get it from, is always negatively charged. Why is that? How do we know that DNA is negatively charged? Exactly. DNA is made up of some number of nucleotides, but every individual nucleotide has a nitrogenous base, a pentose sugar, and a phosphate. And every phosphate group has a negative charge. So DNA from any organism is going to be negatively charged. And therefore, DNA in electrophoresis is always going to move toward whichever end is positively charged, opposite to the negative. So we set it up with wells on one end, and you just have to be careful when you put it in the chamber that you don't have it reversed. Right? If I had positive up here and negative down here, then the DNA would just all spill off the edge, and it would be worthless. But anyway, that's why in your real gels, not your practice gel, the real gel you'll be loading back there. That's why it's all at one end. Electrophoresis trial, well, before I get into that, each well defines a lane, a so-called lane. So it's kind of like a swimming race, you know, where you have to stay in your lane in the pool. You put a different sample in each well, and therefore in each lane. And when you turn on the electricity and wait long enough, the race will happen. And just like any race, everyone starts at the same start line, but moves at different speeds. Well, there's no movement unless there's a charge, but that's taken care of by DNA because it is charged. So what determines how fast each particle moves is the size and the shape. The swimming analogy holds true not only because of the lanes, but also it's kind of like swimming through water, which you know is a lot harder to move through than walking in air. Or just walking in a swimming pool if it's up to your neck is really hard, right? Well, it's even harder if you try to walk through a swimming pool with your arms out. So the shape matters as well as the size. Things that are not as compact will move more slowly than things of the same size but more compact. And also, bigger things will have more trouble getting through the gel than smaller ones. So that's really the main thing for today's application of electrophoresis that matters. Because we have DNA, it all has the same tendency to move because it's all negatively charged. But larger pieces of DNA will move more slowly. Once you start the clock, the smaller pieces will move faster. And therefore, in a given amount of time, they'll end up traveling farther through the gel than the bigger ones that get left behind. That's the separation. that is the essence of electrophoresis. Now, since all of the particles are starting out in a well, wherever they land will define what are called bands in that lane. If you have a mixture, let me say something else. A band, which is what you actually can visualize with your eyes, a band is not a single particle. A single particle of DNA would travel through the electrophoresis gel, but you just wouldn't see it. It'd be too small to see with your eye. What a band is a lot of copies of exactly the same size particle. And they therefore all move at the same speed as a group. And wherever they land, there's enough of them that you'll see it as a band. But if you start with a collection of many copies of each of two sizes, then they'll move at there'll be two groups moving at different speeds, and it'll band out as two bands. All right? And that's why you used PCR last week, to get enough copies so that you could actually see them as visible bands. What you're using the electrophoresis for is the ultimate result today, is to determine the sex of the two owls that you chose DNA from. The reason this works is because when you did PCR last week, you weren't making copies of the entire genome, not all of the DNA. That was set up kind of behind the scenes because you didn't know what was in the mixture, but it was set up to amplify or make copies of just a specific segment of DNA that's found on sex chromosomes in birds. Well, birds are kind of the opposite of us when it comes to sex chromosomes. In us animals, the XY system, the female has two of the same sex chromosomes, she's XX, and the male has one of each, an X and a Y. Well, they're not called X and Y in birds, they're called Z and W, but it's just the opposite in terms of which sex has two of the same. It's in a male, it's two Z's in birds. In a female, it's a Z and a W. Well, the particular piece of DNA that was isolated and amplified in PCR last week comes from either Z or W. And the reason electrophoresis works is that if it came from a W, it's a little bit shorter than the same piece that was amplified from a Z. And therefore, if you have a male bird, which means two Z's, you'll see only one band because it's only one size and it all moves as a group. But if you have a female, part of the mixture is the Z length and part of it is the W length. They'll move at different speeds and you'll see two bands. Does that all make sense? Okay, well, All you really need to do is follow the instructions for adding loading dye to your sample and then putting that into your gel. That reminds me, I should have gotten your samples out and started thawing them. But it's good to do a little practice for this. Practice loading the gels, that is. And that's why you have those Petri dishes sitting out with practice gels in them. So importantly here, when you do your practice pipetting, don't use the orange stuff, which is labeled LD for loading dye. That's only for your real sample that you're going to put in the real gels back there. When you do your practice, use the purple stuff, which is just food coloring. All right? But go ahead and do a few with your practice to get a feel for this, because you have to kind of be steady-handed. So the less shaky of the pair should be the one who loads the gels. Anyway, the well has a certain depth. To do this properly, assuming that you dial up your micropipetter properly and you already have your sample in the micropipetter, you want to carefully put the tip of the pipette into the well, so don't release it while it's above the surface of the gel. put it into the well, but not so far that you're sticking it into the gel on the bottom of the well. Try to get the point just in the space of the well, and then, you know, remember, you push it all the way down to get it out. But then resist the temptation to let go, because if you let go while it's still in place, you'll just suck it right back up. So squirt it all out, take it out of the well, and then let go of the plunger. You'll get a feel for it in just a few times. Don't spend forever practicing. It doesn't have to be absolutely perfect. But do a few practice with that while I get the real gels out. And then when you're ready, process your samples. You're simply adding the right amount of orange loading dye to your bird sample right into that little tube, and then sucking out the right amount of that mixture and putting it into the wells. How many groups do we have? Looks like we've made 6. So I can do this all in one gel, because the gel has at least 12 lanes. We would need 12, right? Yes. Okay, so I'll get the gel out, and all you need to pay attention to, other than carefully doing it correctly, is which two lanes you're putting it into. So the gel that I'll put out will look just like the one I drew originally, the one with the wells at the end. When you look at the gel over here, call lane 1 the one that's on the left, upper left, like there. Okay? 1, 2, and then however many. Just remember which of your two samples are in which two lanes, and know which one is in which of those two lanes, okay? Because then once we run the electrophoresis trial, we'll look at them under that illuminator, and you'll be able to see your bands. It's probably a good idea right now to put gloves on and get your sample tubes, because they're probably still frozen. Just keep them in your fingers while they thaw. Or at least one of you can do that while the other one practice micropipetting.